Now, changing gear. Bit of a wake-up call tonight for very many of us, and by us, I actually me included. It's what's been called a respectable addiction. Not good for our health, our families, not good for our workplace, our fellow workers, our society, could even say, perhaps surprisingly, our economy. And this respectable addiction is encouraged, more often demanded, wherever we turn. We're under pressure from our politicians, our bosses, many of our friends. Perhaps more than anyone else, we put ourselves under this pressure. Christian churches played a big part in it all, going back centuries, encouraging this addiction. It's our addiction to work, in what my next guest tonight describes as our workaholic nation, a perverse pride in toiling for long hours and sleeping for far, far too few hours. Love to get your views on this one as well. Tap into your experience with this in the workplace. Give us a call, 1300 40 2020, or post on our Open House Community Facebook page. Have you felt, or has your family felt, this kind of mounting pressure? How has it played out at the grassroots level in your workplace? How's it played out in your family, your life? Do you feel trapped, unable to speak up at work, while the hours and the pressures and the stress continues to mount? Do you feel you have no choice, as more and more is expected on less and less? What about families? Mum or dad away at work for longer and longer? Mum and dad, more and more stressed. The fun seems to have been sucked out of family life. Maybe you're one who takes great pride in rising to the mounting challenges, kicking more and more goals on less and less sleep. Maybe there are great rewards in it for you or your family. And that's your experience. 1300 40 2020 or post on our Open House Community Facebook page. That kind of pride that I spoke about just then is why it's a respectable addiction, according to writer and commentator Judith Ireland, who joins us tonight on Open House. Judith, good evening.
Hi, good evening, Lee.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
Was there anything in particular that put you onto this? I think it's a very big issue for most of us, whether we're in the workforce, wherever we are, and the impact it has on our health and families.
Well, for a long time, I've been struck both socially and in the office by how people tend to compare, and I think even compete sometimes over their working hours. And I think there's an inference sometimes that the longer you work, therefore the more important you are and the more important your job is. But more specifically, recently I was interested by the Jetstar Toughen Up Princesses incident, which yes. I'm sure you'll remember, where some of the pilots complained about long working hours and a captain said, toughen up, you know, you're just lazy. And so that sparked off the article.
Yeah. And that attitude is so much more pervasive than we'd like to think.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you are in the office, you might expect to be talking about working hours, but I think most people find that it's also something that they see follows them socially, and it doesn't matter what their job is, you know, whether they're a university professor or a lawyer or someone who has their own business, that this sort of trend is across society.
We might whinge about it, and we do, but one author you quote has put it like this: the allure of exhaustion is baffling, that we boast of insane working hours and how little sleep we get. Go figure.
Yeah. Margaret Heffernan is a US businesswoman, and she wrote a really interesting book recently called Willful Blindness, and that examines why humans often ignore uncomfortable and obvious truths. And she talks a lot about overwork and undersleep in her book, and she says there's an enormous amount of evidence that this is bad for productivity and for health, and yet we keep up this trend and we keep up this culture because as you say, there's a pride in it, and people are seen to be good workers and the best workers if they're there for the longest hours.
So why do you think this culture has changed, perhaps I'd say over the last decade or so, more and more on less and less? Why has that happened, and what are some of the examples that you've found in your work?
Yeah, I would say it even dates back to the late 1980s and early 1990s when, you know, there was a series of recessions and financial crises, and even more recently with the global financial crisis. That's seen layoffs and understaffing, and so there's more work for less people in the office. I think the actual of work has sped up, and I think that technology is a big reason for that. Most people would find today that work can follow them anywhere because of their computers and their phones, and there's an expectation that they will work anywhere at any time.
Yes.
And I think that these broader economic changes that we were talking about before have led to a more casualised workforce, and that means that people feel they need to do more to keep up, to keep their work. And I think that, coupled with a weakened union system, means that perhaps people don't feel like they can speak up, or that if they do speak up, they might be maybe at risk of losing their job.
In recent times, I think we could say that some of the pressure has certainly come from politicians. And I think it's interesting and revealing that it's come from a Labor federal government, a party built on the foundations of unionism and fair work. Stories of Kevin Rudd's office are legendary. Julia Gillard talks all the time about working hard, perhaps above all else.
Yes, it's very interesting. I think when Julia Gillard came to power last year, and one of the first things she said when she addressed the nation was she talked about hard work and the value of setting the alarm clock early. And as you mentioned, Kevin Rudd, he was famous, I think, for sleeping only 3 hours a night, allegedly, and for working his office to the bone, and then again promising. It was interesting, when things went wrong, he would promise to work harder. That was his solution. I wonder whether this is perhaps reflects the culture rather than directs it, in the sense that the politicians understand this is a value that the rest of the voting population respect, and they're trying to relate to people. I wonder whether this is a way of our politicians saying, I'm just like you and I value the same things you do.
It's interesting. Judith, I might get you to hold on the line there again. Is this you? I'd love to tap into your experiences, overworked, getting by with less and less sleep. Or are you taking that pride in it all, battling on and still standing? Just, are you feeling the stress and the strain of it all, with no way of escape, nowhere to go? Are there practical ways in which you can share with us that you've seen work and life and the old kind of work-life balance thing radically change over the last 10, or as Judith says, 20 years? How and where do you think it will all end up? Love to hear from you. Post on our Open House Community Facebook page, or give us a buzz, 1300 40 20 20. Daniel has joined us from Adelaide. Evening, Daniel.
Yeah, g'day.
How's work playing out in your life, mate?
I've got three jobs at the moment. I work selling big issue. I also write and paint. And when I'm not writing and painting, I'm studying. I'm trying to learn the language of Hindi at the moment to perhaps get a better job one day.
Okay. And you're holding all that together.
I don't have a lot of time where I'd like to have a social life or do something outside of work, if you know what I mean.
Yes. How are you holding it all together?
It's hard, but there's no point crying about it or do anything. You know, you just got to keep pushing along.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, I'm not like the rest of Australians who get a decent wage because they're normal. I have to get by on a wage of about $3 an hour because I'm disabled. And I don't think that's very fair in this nation, but they always talk about the lowest wages, and they talk about normal people, but they forget about the disabled.
Yes.
The disabled are keeping this country running at the moment. We're working harder than the rest of the population, and in most cases, the disabled are the ones that work, and the people who've got nothing wrong with them aren't even doing nothing.
Daniel, Open House will never forget the disabled, and I'm sure there are a lot of people listening tonight who would take their hats off to you and so many around our nation. Thanks very much for calling in tonight, Daniel, from Adelaide. Judith Ireland, the Christian Church, I've got to ask this question, has played in its own part in this with the old Protestant work ethic. You recall that even in the 16th century, they considered sleep an appetite behaviour, like food and sex.
Yes, I think the religious element here is really interesting, because I think it shows how long some of these ideas have been circulating and how deep they are, you know, in our cultural psychology. And I think we can see it in both the overwork and the undersleep element. In the 16th century, yes, as you say, I understand the Protestants thought sleep was an appetite behaviour like food and like sex, and so it was something that a good and a virtuous person would limit. And then in the 18th and early 19th centuries, when the Industrial Revolution required that people, particularly in Britain, needed to move from their individual farms into urban factory, one of the prods that was used was to say that, well, the Methodists preached that God wanted them to work harder, and so that was an important incentive for people to go into the factories.
So, yes. I'm sure there are no shortage of bosses and corporations who'll say this is all good for business and necessary for our nation's economy, but there are some countries who are doing it differently.
Yes, that's true. A recent book by a US author called Thomas Gagan, it's called Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? And it argues that, well, you know, perhaps Americans in particular are doing things the wrong way, and Americans obviously having quite a similar work culture to Australia, which is interesting for us. The book points out that Germans actually work less hours than their US counterparts, but have a greater productivity and a greater quality of life. So it shows that even if we do think, well, working harder might, you know, be difficult for family, be difficult for social life, you know, at least it's better for the workplace. Gagan's argument says actually that's not true, that doesn't play out.
Yes. What do you think it's going to take to turn this around, or is it at all possible to turn this around, especially, as we've said, considering the diminishing influence of unions over these past couple of decades?
I think, you know, as we've discussed, it's a pretty complex issue. It's got economic and religious and cultural, social roots. Mm. So it's a pretty thorny one. But look, I'm optimistic. The South Australian Centre for Work and Life recently produced 6 case studies of Australian workplaces that were implementing work-life friendly measures. And I'm not just talking about sort of yoga lessons at lunchtime, but things like bosses at the top setting the culture, which is really important, individual models for different staff, rethinking business models, really getting in there again and trying to reinvent the wheel. So that makes me pretty optimistic. And I think that as individuals, we can all take a personal stand. And even if we don't have the luxury of working less, if our situation doesn't permit that, then I think we can still decide not to be impressed by either our own working hours or other people's long working hours. I think that's possible.
Yeah, it's a good point. Judith Ireland, thank you so much for joining us on Open House tonight.
Thank you.